Does God always do everything he can to save his people? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, Emeritus Professor of Old Testament in the Walla Walla University School of Theology. I'm your host and study guide author. My conversation partners are again Brant Berglund from the Walla Walla University School of Theology and Albert Handel, Walla Walla University campus chaplain. Our lesson today, the title is, What More Could I Have Done? And it echoes the question Isaiah asks in the parable of the vineyard. And now, inhabitants of Jerusalem and the people of Judah, judge between me and my vineyard. What more was there to do for my vineyard that I have not done in it? When I expected it to yield grapes, why did it yield rotten grapes? If I believe that there was more that God could have done and didn't do, what implications would that be?
This is a seriously problematic topic for me because there's a place where Jesus tells his hearers in Galilee region, if the miracles that had been done in you had been done in Sodom and Gomorrah, they would have repented in sackcloth and ashes. Then why didn't he do them there?
Like they had access to an additional revelation that wasn't available to others.
But if that's the case, why did not God break into Sodom and Gomorrah and offer it to them so that they would repent? That was a shocking sort of concern to me in reading that passage, because if they had been done in those places, they would have repented in sackcloth long ago. Oh, well, did God do everything he could then for them? And that is still a passage that I'm questioning, and I don't mean to take us off track, but maybe that's along the lines of where we're going.
That's the line that we need to take. What more could I have done?
Yeah.
Well, it definitely seems like there is, like the parable of the wages on the servants, it definitely seems like some are given an abundance of revelation, whereas others have a diminished, limited scope to see God in his most powerful God and his most clear. I think we're naive if we don't think that some have been granted a richer, deeper, more expansive revelation of God than others.
And yet those very people are held to a higher degree of responsibility. I get that sense from the New Testament, you know, in the book of James, watch out, you who claim to be teachers, for your judgment is double of those who don't, right? There's a level of responsibility that comes with those who claim to have extra knowledge.
There's an intriguing quotation, Ministry of Healing, page 483. It's in the chapter, In Contact with Others. And this is what Ellen White says. Every association of life calls for the exercise of self-control, forbearance, and sympathy. We differ so widely in disposition, habits, education, that our ways of looking at things vary. We judge differently. Our understanding of truth, our ideas in regard to the conduct of life are not in all respects the same. There are no two whose experiences are alike in every particular. The trials of one are not the trials of another. The duties that one finds light are to another most difficult and perplexing. So frail, so ignorant, so liable to misconception is human nature that each of us should be careful in the estimate he places upon another. We little know the bearing of our acts upon the experience of others. What we do or say may seem to us of little moment. When could our eyes be opened, we should see that upon it depended the most important results for good or for evil. Now, that's an intriguing quote. I had a Adventist physician, devout Adventist physician, when he heard that quotation, and he heard me give it several times, he said, that strikes me as a postmodern quote. And I think he's probably right. So what's wrong with being postmodern?
An ultra-relativism that tries to suggest that people are so different that there is no similarity between them. Postmodernism has tended that direction for a while. I'm not sure it's there now, but
Albert, you've been strangely quiet here.
I guess I'm worried that any comment I make might identify me as postmodern.
Well, if Ellen White could be accused of being a postmodern, why not?
Yeah, I think when it comes to that question of what more could have been done, and in this context, I have a very difficult time in this whole conversation, because I can't but acknowledge that in every scenario, there's more than could have been done, and God didn't do it. We have to have two things. We believe four things at the same time. God is omnipotent. God is omniscient. That God is omnibenevolent. and that there is evil in the world. All four things are true at the same time. Well, it feels like we have a deep conundrum as believers if we're going to hold all four of those things. Three of them we believe through our theological convictions, and the fourth one is because we're alive. We just look
experience.
We just look around, and the fourth one is true. And so one is experiential, and the first three are mental, and we say, well, how do we reconcile our theological convictions and our daily experience? Not to go into a full sermon, but for me, it has to go back to that conviction that, well, one of these has to be more true than the others, and that is that God is love. And when we start there, that God is love and that that's most true, then you can begin to deal with the rest of these in kind of cascading order. Whether that makes us postmodern or not, I don't know, but I have to start there. God is love. That's most true. So then let me work through the rest of it.
Yeah, this is challenging, because when we think about what more God could have done, I certainly see places in the Bible. Why couldn't he have shown up to Uzzah? We talked about Uzzah a few weeks ago, right? And couldn't he have shown up there just before he touched Ark and said, my friend, don't do that. I don't want to strike you down. That's a sacred object, right? He didn't show up. Will there be a sense, though, that the end of Revelation is true, where over and over in the second half of the book, everybody's proclaiming, just and true are your ways, O King of Saints. You have done the right thing. Because right now, it certainly is hard to see it sometimes in our world, that he's done all that he could. He's, for Babylon the Great, does he really intervene in the right ways? In the end, it says he does.
Yeah, why didn't the oxen that carrying the ark, one of them lean over the shoulder and begin speaking like the donkey? It's happened elsewhere. Why not here? So right. It feels like there's resources left on the table at times, and that leads us to demand that the books be opened, to demand for an exhaustive reading and understanding of why God has done what God has done.
And we've talked about the rules of engagement, and now we're talking about the question of God has done enough. And I wonder sometimes if we don't fully know the rules of engagement, that God cannot engage as much as we might like him to. Perhaps there's some – we say he's omniscient and omnipotent. He can do anything, and yet maybe he can't. Maybe he can't act in the ways that he would want because of the rules he himself has set on the conflict.
Well, the lesson here on the rules of engagement would certainly suggest that there are certain things that God cannot do, will not do, and he puts limits on human beings too.
This is a very tough sort of lesson in question, Alden. And it's sad too, because the parable of the vineyard has its parallel in the New Testament in the book of Matthew, of course, when Jesus retells it to the Jewish people and says, the kingdom of God will be taken from you and given to a people bearing its fruit. Did God do everything he could for Israel? And then we look at their history and you think, well, why did he stick with them so long? He did more than they deserve, certainly.
There's another vineyard story here in this lesson, Matthew 21, 33 to 41. Listen to another parable, Jesus says. There was a landowner who planted a vineyard, put a fence around it, dug a wine press in it, and built a watchtower. Then he leased it to tenants and went away. When the harvest time had come, he sent his slaves to the tenants to collect his produce. But the tenants seized his slaves and beat one, killed another, stoned another. So again he sent other slaves, more than the first, and they treated them in the same way. Then he sent his son to them, saying, they will respect my son. But when the tenants saw the son, they said to him, this is the heir. Come, let us kill him and get his inheritance. So they seized him, threw him out of the vineyard, and killed him. Now when the owner of the vineyard comes, what will he do to those tenants? They said to him, he will put those wretches to a miserable death and lease the vineyard to other tenants who will give him the produce at the harvest time.
It's the same story retold for a modern audience, right?
Yeah.
What more could Jesus have done? You who stone the prophets and those sent to you, how often I long to gather you together as a hen gathers her chicks, but you weren't willing. That speaks to this issue a bit. You weren't willing. God did what he could, and you weren't willing.
Now, you asked earlier, Brant, our preference for positive motivation. You get more with the carrot
than the stick.
And in fact, Paul in chapter 4 in 1 Corinthians. It's one of my favorite passages to show out the diversity of what God does. What do you want? Shall I come to you with stick or love?
And spirit of gentleness. Yeah, kindness.
And if you take all the hard stuff away, then there are some people you won't reach. There are people that will be reached only with tough love. Isn't that true?
Do you feel like God uses both equally, or that one is more often the way that God operates, carrot versus stick?
My preference is that God would always use carrot.
That's your preference?
It's my preference.
What's your survey of stories? Because I guess we all have our bias, but my attention goes to, I've drawn you with an everlasting love. I know that that's not all of the stories, but that's where I go.
Yeah.
And yet my own history of growing up is that oftentimes it took the stick, proverbially, or really? A belt or a switch from an almond tree to mend my ways. I did not respond as well to money given to me for better grades. That was not helpful for me as a young person. And maybe even today I need a little bit more of a swift kick in the backside to get moving sometimes than I do a gentle word and a candy bar.
So God will do what's ever necessary. Sometimes he does more than we would like. Sometimes he does less. That's just the way it is. My thanks to Brant and to Albert for their contributions. And my thanks to Kristen Byerly, our program engineer. And thank you for listening in for The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.